right. It is 10 minutes after 9. You've got it tuned to KHUM. And our Stop the Violence, Start the Healing campaign resumes this week. We're dealing with indigenous rights and cultural appropriation. Yesterday, we spoke with Chris Peters, the president of Seventh Generation Fund. It was a fantastic interview, and that's up at KHUM.com right now. Joining me in studio is Michaela Alvarez. Hello.
Hey, Cliff.
How are you doing?
I'm well. It's good to see you. How are you?
Good to see you, too. Now, I think for full disclosure, I should let folks know that I know you very well. You lived with us for several years, and we consider you like an adopted daughter.
Yeah, and definitely, full disclosure would be definitely family, close friends, chosen family. Forever, still live around the block, see you all the time, probably
right.
Be there for the holidays.
Absolutely. All right, now that that's all on the table, let's talk about today's topic. Now, we've got to acknowledge the 500-pound elephant in the room, and that was the election. It's kind of rocked us all. We're all a little bit in shock. But I think... In looking at this, I think our topic this week, dealing with indigenous rights and cultural appropriation, perhaps more important now than ever.
Absolutely. And like before we go on, I want to say to my queer and trans folks of color, my siblings, I see you and I hear you and we'll make this. And I don't know how, but we will come together and we will organize and we will survive and we will do it together. And I don't want to say it's going to be all right, but we've been through a lot. We'll make it work.
That is true. I mean, the thing is that the campaign of the winning candidate was based a lot on hate and fear. And well, one can only hope that that was mostly rhetoric and going forward... he will act more presidential. That's all we can hope at this point because it's a fait accompli. He is the president-elect.
And absolutely. And I would hope that even if it is rhetoric, that we recognize that the folks who have voted for him have brought to the surface a lot of what actually cultural appropriation reflects, which is why even though... I think a lot of folks would argue that cultural appropriation is sort of like the ABCs of racism and having those conversations. It's important to A, start somewhere, and B, to recognize those small ways in which our culture reifies this very rhetoric that has pushed this person's campaign to victory.
Absolutely. Now, there are so many different forms of cultural appropriation, and I think a lot of folks may not be aware of it. It's just we've all grown up in society where it's actually a cultural appropriation is kind of just part of everyday life. And, for those on the end where their culture has been appropriated, they've known about this for years. But a lot of folks have been oblivious to this point, and that's one of the reasons that we're bringing this up today, to make this a little bit more in your face, to bring this a little bit more to the surface. I mentioned in the promo that it's been considered quite inappropriate for some time for white people to dress up in blackface.
That was, yes, this was inappropriate.
But this was done quite commonly in the early part of the 20th century, right up to the middle part of the 20th century until it became considered inappropriate. But that has been obvious now for some time, but there is so much more that is less obvious to most people, and that's what we want to talk about today.
Absolutely. And I do want to say that, like, blackface is still absolutely happening. And interestingly, one of the easiest examples to always talk about, one of the obvious examples of cultural appropriation is Halloween. And mm-hmm. when people are dressing up in blackface and brownface and little Maui costumes that Disney has released. But I do want to absolutely talk about those more subtle forms of cultural appropriation that people might not find to be as big of a deal, because when you have the Washington Redskins running around with their mascots and you have the Cleveland Indians, that it's easier to point to those and be like, well, that's clearly cultural appropriation. But it's sort of harder to dissect those other subtler ways we are continuing to dehumanize, infantilize, and reduce the cultures of people who are already oppressed in our country.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that you can speak to personally, as grown up in Hawaii, is Hawaiian cultural appropriation, and this is something that goes on to this day. As a matter of fact, my youngest boy goes to Eureka High, and they just had a Hawaiian day where everyone was dressing up in Hawaiian garb.
Yeah, which is something that. So I'm Native Hawaiian, and I've spent part of my life in my grade school education in Hawaii, but I've spent a really large deal of it here. I went to Sunny Brae Middle School, I went to Arcata High School, and there's always a Spirit Week, and so part of the Spirit Week, folks dress up, you know, a lot of times you can do, like, decades, like, maybe you have, like, a disco era, mm-hmm. or you will dress up as a chosen profession that you hope to achieve one day, but also really common is Tourist Day, Aloha Day, Hawaiian Day, and basically children are encouraged to come to school and show their school spirit by dressing in grass skirts and coconut bras and saying aloha to each other. And the amount of racism that this, like, how racist this is often lost on folks. Because, first of all, people don't necessarily always recognize that Native Hawaiians exist still, which is the case with a lot of Indigenous folks. People don't realize that we are still here. We still exist. We definitely still want our land and sovereignty back. And there's not this realization that there could be Hawaiian people among you. What people will say is, which is why this becomes subtle, is that people will say, we are honoring your culture. We are honoring you. We are providing awareness to your rich culture and your beautiful culture. And that's simply not the case, because if you're honoring us, what are you doing the other 364 days for us and our rights and our culture?
Absolutely. And, you know, the thing is that, you know, you do have to look at this from someone else's perspective and take it in a different, you know, take it, look at an example that maybe someone else could possibly relate to. Not everyone is a Native Hawaiian. Okay, let's just say, for example, I'm Jewish. You know, if people went running around wearing tallises and yarmulkes and davening at walls, we're just honoring you during Halloween, I would find that amazingly offensive. If, let's just say, okay, Jews, okay, well, that's only 1% of the population. Easy to, let's look at Christians. Let's just say folks dressed up like the Pope and started spraying holy water on everybody for Halloween. Some people might take offense at that.
And that's true. And I do think it's also important to... So something that makes the conversation of cultural appropriation difficult is the question of whose culture is being appropriated mm-hmm. and what counts as cultural appropriation, which, of course, this becomes a very difficult topic because, for example, as a person of color, I am of mixed race descent. I am also Chinese and Japanese and Portuguese. And when I try to have a conversation about cultural appropriation, people will say, I notice you're wearing blue jeans. And there is, so for example, I know, right? But so the argument there is, I should be able to wear a kimono because you're wearing blue jeans.
Oh my.
So yes, it sounds silly, but it's an argument that's made. And so there is a strong difference between being forced to assimilate into the dominant culture. So wearing pants, because if I wore traditional clothing of one of, like, my cultural backgrounds, people would actually find me to be weird. There would be this sense of other, this sense of oddness of why am I so different? But if a non-Japanese person, specifically a white person, were to wear a kimono, it's like a fashion statement. And so when we talk about the majority and we talk about, like, the culture of the majority, so, like, for example, I think that Christianity is probably considered a really mainstream religion, that it's not sort of the same effect as dressing up or taking on the cultures and the rights, R-I-T-E-S, of marginalized peoples, which becomes a very difficult topic in general. Yeah.
And when you take a look at the fact that many indigenous peoples' culture is disappearing, then appropriating their culture makes it even that much more offensive.
Absolutely. There is this reality. So a lot of people will say that they have a spirit animal. And I'm talking about people who aren't Native American. Mm-hmm. That's really common, and people don't find that to be, like, racist. But the reason this is racist is because there were concerted efforts to kill the people of this land whose beliefs, like, just for holding their rights, for dancing, children taken from their homes and beaten for speaking their language, for engaging their belief system, and then to have the descendants of those very people who were trying to kill the beliefs of the indigenous peoples of these lands, it's so insulting. It's insulting, and I'm reluctant to call it ignorance because, like, we all know that this happened, that this is happening, that colonization is happening, and it's actually tied into, in my opinion, one of the most subtle ways cultural appropriation manifests itself, and it has to do with, like, personal belief and identity. It's very clear to people, don't wear Native American headdresses it's hopefully clear to people. I don't think it's that clear to people because, again, like, we've got high school mascots of folks. But that seems to be an easy one for a lot of people to identify. Hey, that's not okay. But I do meet a lot of people who say, you know, well, I have this belief system and it's not from my culture. Is this racist and how do I change my beliefs? And you really can't. I think you can't necessarily change your beliefs. But, like, a good example, actually, that I use. I have a partner, and he is a white person, and he's a vegetarian, and this is because he identifies as a Buddhist. Well, not explicitly, and it's because we've had a conversation about what it means to be a white person able to take on the religion of brown peoples and cultures that have been oppressed and peoples who have been oppressed. And so what he does is, as an ally, if you are a person out there who is engaging in a belief system that belongs to people of color, that has its foundations and its origins in cultures of people of color, I would really recommend that you examine, are you using the tokens and the iconography of these people? And are you supporting and uplifting the voices of those people who have brought to you these ideas that you hold so dear to you? Because don't you owe them that? If they've touched you in, like, in your heart and in your spirit in this way, are you honoring them? Is this an honoring of who we are as people? Or is this another way to confirm yourself and your position in this world? And I think that that is the most valuable aspect of this, like, conversation of cultural appropriation and how it fits into this greater idea of how do we dismantle cultures of racism? Like, is it about take that off and you're not a racist? Or is it you need to sincerely examine how your personal identities are affecting the people around you and the communities around you?
Absolutely. And the thing is that, and the reason that we're bringing this up is because when you are in a position of privilege, and, you know, I am in a major position of privilege, I'm white, I'm male, you've got to really be sensitive to the issues of those who aren't as privileged. And if you're taking a look at, you know, what we're looking at this week is the rights of indigenous peoples and cultural appropriation, it is, you know, it is very easy to say, oh, these people are being too sensitive, this is politically correct. But here's the thing. I mean, if you are not standing in their shoes and you are saying they're just being too sensitive, you have nothing to judge that on. I mean, you can't say that. The thing is, if people of color, if people of indigenous races are offended by something that you are doing, then it's offensive. Period.
Yeah. Does it offend? Then it's offensive.
Then it's offensive. You don't get to say, I don't think that's offensive. If it is offensive, it's offensive. Period. And at that point, you've got to reexamine. Maybe I shouldn't be doing this. Maybe I should look at this differently. And, you know, we touched a little bit about early on about these big national teams like the Washington Redskins and the, you know, the Cleveland Indians and you know, the Atlanta Braves and the Florida State Seminoles. It's prevalent nationally, but we also, you know, just locally, you know, we've got, you know, high school mascots like the Warriors. And, you know, Chris Peters talked about that a little bit yesterday, you know, is that, you know, it's not just, you know, they're not just Warriors in general. They are Native American Warriors. That is the, you know, and again, it's like, well, we're honoring. No, you're appropriating. And this is happening locally, and it's really not being talked about.
Yeah, and I tried to actually, upon finding out that Eureka High had had this spirit day, actually, of dressing up as a Native Hawaiian, like, as Native Hawaiian, like, pan culture, you know, grass skirts and all that, I actually wrote a letter to the principal of the school, and which I've made available on Facebook as a public post, and that was weeks ago, and I have not heard back from the principal of Eureka High School at all. Principal Johnson, I believe, is this person's name. And I can only assume that my complaint and my request was not taken seriously. I requested that they apologize, that they think of the reality that they might have Native Hawaiian students in their own school. I asked them to, if they claim to be honoring us, to talk about not only what happened to our lands and our people and what is happening, and but to also create a dialogue and a space for the people whose land we are living on, which is the Wiat people's homelands. And I have not heard back, and I really think that it maybe, well, I do think that there's a possibility that maybe it's a hard conversation to have, but that's why it needs to be had, that we can't just wash our hands of our racism and hope it'll go away, because it's not, and it's rearing its head. And cultural appropriation is one of those just subtle, insidious ways that our culture continues this underlying sense of white, this underlying white supremacist everything. The entire culture is white supremacist, and that's how things like this election occur. And then everybody turns around and is like, did you see this coming? I could not have predicted this. But then you look and you see how commonplace it is to infantilize and dehumanize people, that we're literally teaching it in our schools down the road, that it's okay to mock and ridicule and usurp the items and the dress and the beliefs of people who aren't white.
Yes. Now, as you mentioned, this campaign has brought up a lot of racism. There has been a lot of actual just blatant racist comments that have been made, but it's important to note that there are varying different layers of racism. You know, the outright, you know, name calling, being insulting directly, is not the only form of racism. This what we are talking about today is a much more subtle form of racism, and it's there. And I think, you know, those in privilege really need to own it and be aware that it is there and it is offensive.
Absolutely. And if people are wondering how racism is alive and well in 2016, this is exactly how, is that it is socially unacceptable, or well, it has been recently socially unacceptable to outright use slurs usually. But, and that is an action that is shamed. However, these more subtle forms of racism, such as cultural appropriation, because they're referred to as covert racism, because it's sneaky and it's there and it keeps ideology going, and it teaches people of color to have like less self-worth. And there's often the argument, well, it's so little, it's so tiny. How could that create this culture of white supremacy? How could that be reifying this culture? And the answer is that it's repeated. It is little. I saw this really brilliant YouTube video that described things like cultural appropriation and other microaggressions as like mosquito bites, that one, it's not such a big deal, but if you are swarmed with them, you are overcome, you are ripping your skin apart trying to get this itch off of you, and it burns and it hurts. And when you see that so repeatedly, that subtlety in racism is what creates the implicit biases that people talk about when they talk about police brutality, when they talk about, you know, the inequality in academia, when we talk about all of these big system things. It's those little cultural mosquito bites every day that are making it easier and easier for privileged folks to accept this reality, to then say, I'm so sorry this has happened, I'm so guilty, but then to not take action. So I really recommend to privileged folks, to white folks, when you see this happening, when you're, I call it your racism spidey senses. There are a lot of folks out there who are like, I feel like something was racist, but I don't quite know how to have this conversation, so I won't say anything. I hear this a lot. And what I say is follow your spidey senses and turn around and just say, I'm not sure how to tell you that what you're doing or what you're saying or what you're wearing is racist, but I'm going to recommend that you stop doing it. Just do that, because social pressure is quite powerful in its own way, and it is something that privileged folks can do. I get a lot of people asking me, how can I be a better ally to people of color? How can I be an accomplice? How can I help without putting a burden on people of color to teach me everything? And I just say, follow your instincts. If your spidey senses of racism are tingling, put a stop to it. The reality is, people don't really listen to activists of color like me. And that's, we don't have very many places of access. So this is really, for example, good that I'm here being able to speak on the air as a trans indigenous person, because there aren't a lot of outlets for us on a large scale. But if you're a person with privilege and you have that access, uplift those voices. Invite people into your spaces who are willing, who are already putting themselves out there as people who are willing to talk. Don't go knocking on the doors of every person of color you know, because that's not good either, and we're dealing with a lot. But step up. Step up to have those conversations with the other people in your lives who share your same level of privilege. I really encourage the idea of calling in people who are on your same level of privilege. If you have relatively less privilege than somebody, I'm all about calling them out and being like, hey, stop this. I'm not going to explain why, because I don't have the energy for you. But if you're on the same social status with somebody and you share the same like racial and gender privilege, like if you share the same racial privilege with somebody, call them out on their racism. If you share the same gender privilege with somebody, call them out on their sexism or their transphobia. If you want to see change in your immediate community, you're going to have to do that. You're going to have to do that for the people that you say that you care about and are oppressions.
I like what you said about trusting your spidey senses. The thing is, if it feels racist, if it feels sexist, it probably is.
And I do want to add, if it doesn't feel racist or sexist, but somebody who is affected by that oppression tells you it is, Just agree with them. Just go with it. It's a good rule of thumb.
Don't argue it.
Yeah, if we just tell you, hey, don't do this, just stop. Just honestly stop. Then we won't even need to have a conversation then that would burden the person of color to explain to you why it's so racist. We'll just be able to be like, will you stop? Yes. Problem solved. Well, tiny problem solved.
Alrighty. Well, believe it or not, we are out of time. It's gone by fast. Michaela Alverness, thank you so much for coming in here and talking about this and taking your time today.
Thank you for having me, and I hope I made some semblance of sense.
Absolutely. This conversation for our Stop the Violence campaign, you will find up very shortly at khum.com.